Welcome to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. Here's Connie.
Hi, I'm Connie Whitman, your host, and you're listening to Enlightenment of Change on webtalkradio.net. So excited for you to join us this week. Alrighty, my motivational quote today is by Vala Afshar, and it says, "We are not a team because we work together. We are a team because we respect, trust, and care for each other." So we're going to talk about etiquette today. Now, etiquette is such a simple term. In simple terms, is how you or I conduct ourselves and how we treat others. So etiquette is manners and behaviors in the workplace are actually a really big topic. Well, the reality is, I think that today in the workforce, people come and get this, five generations and all kinds of backgrounds and perspectives. And we're working together under this really intense pressure, avoiding and saying or doing or something that might annoy, offend, right? God forbid we offend or alienate someone. And we're always walking on eggshells. So how can business leaders mitigate misunderstandings and foster this teamwork? And how can we minimize these interpersonal missteps? And how important is this concept in today's workplace? Well, my guest today is Roseanne Thomas. Roseanne is the founder and president of Protocol Advisors, Inc., and she's a specialist in providing business etiquette training to professionals at respected organizations from Tiffany & Company to Boeing. And she's also helped prepare students at top colleges and universities to achieve the highest degree of workplace success. She lives in Boston, Massachusetts, and is an expert on business etiquette sought after by leading organizations. Roseanne takes on these challenges, and she wrote an awesome book. It's Excuse Me, The Survival Guide to Modern Business. And she presents this whole new playbook for the workplace behavior that respects the individual, which in turn actually benefits the company. With Excuse Me as their trusted etiquette advisor, readers will not only reap career building and bottom line advantages, but also enjoy just a more pleasant workplace. So Roseanne, thank you so much for being on the show for the second time.
Oh my goodness, it is such a pleasure to be with you, Con. Thank you for having me.
I love having you. And I think this topic is just really important. And I just want to remind everyone, Roseanne and I did a show a couple of months ago, and we talked about etiquette and respect, and we kind of did some defining to help you navigate. And we also talked about the different generations, the Gen Zs, the Gen Xs, et cetera, and the baby boomers like myself. So go back and listen to that show. You can listen to this show before. It doesn't really matter. But go back because Ro shared some tremendous and valuable information during that show as well. So Ro, I just wanted to remind everybody, again, like there's more, right, than just today.
Thank you. Yeah. Yes.
Just so that we can ground the conversation today, can we start by sharing? I want you to define how you see or define real respect.
You know, real respect we used to think about things like, saying please and thank you and holding doors open. Those things are still important. But today, you know, real respect is considering how the other person perceives respect. There was once a time when we would all sort of be admonished to apply the golden rule, which is great. You know, the golden rule, treat others the way in which we want to be treated. That's fine to the extent that it goes. What we now need to do is apply the platinum rule, which is to treat others the way in which they want to be treated. It's very different. It requires that we think about that because, you know, we come from so many different backgrounds, experiences, ages, generations, cultures, lifestyles, physical abilities, all of these things that we cannot assume that someone else wants to be treated exactly the way we do.
Well, and the other thing too, Ro, and I know you've had this through your career, and you and I have spoken, my partner and I created an online communication style assessment. So we are also wired a certain way, right? Some people move faster than others. Some people are more thoughtful. Others shoot from the hip. So not only do we have all of those other things you mentioned, but we also are wired differently. So yeah, I love this platinum rule because everybody doesn't communicate or think or behave or come from the same background. background as me or you, so that if we're not shifting to understand their perspective, we could be miscommunicating without even realizing it, right?
Absolutely. You know, because again, we're applying our own lens, you know, we're looking at the world through our own lens. And it's understandable because that's the way in which we look at the world. This is our background experiences, but it does not necessarily mean that we're going to be able to bridge that gap, whatever it happens to be, with someone else. It requires that we really look at how they look at the world. We'll never be who they are. We'll never have their experiences, but we can make a good faith effort to understand how they look at the world, and that will be well received. They'll be appreciative.
Yeah, because our way isn't necessarily the right way.
Well, right? It's the right way. It's the right way for us.
For us, personally. Yes.
Yeah, but it's we can't presume that it's the right way for everyone because it isn't.
And you know, it's interesting. I love this show because I have guests like you. I have guests from all around the world, so they have their cultural spin or perspective versus the United States, and. I'm not saying I always agree with my guest perspective per se. Most of the times I do. I think you gravitate, right, to like-minded people gravitate to each other. But I love that sometimes they'll share a perspective and I'll think, oh my goodness, I never even thought of that. So opening yourself also, I think, to other perspectives is kind of important.
Absolutely important. You know, it used to be that we were doing business with people maybe across the street or across the city or even across the country. We're trying to foster relationships with people across the world. And we can only do that if we show respect for them. The respect engenders trust. The trust leads to relationships and relationships lead to business success.
Yeah, exactly. More business. And that's really what everybody is trying to achieve in a relationship-based way. Now, corporations, you talk about that the cultures encourage disrespect. Just give us some background on that, please.
Well, you know, unfortunately, it's a huge problem. Everyone talks about the importance of respect, but they don't necessarily think that their particular company is a culprit in not showing respect. But studies tell us that 80% of people have either experienced or witnessed disrespect on the job. And it's almost always comes from the top. Now, I'm sorry to say that, but it's true because the people at the top, they are the ones that sort of communicate the corporate culture. They behave in a certain way. They allow certain behaviors. And all of that translates into, you know, how people treat one another. So I think those at the top really have to look at what they're doing and what they're espousing in making sure that it is respectful of all.
When you share that type of statistic, and it's real, right? 80%, it's statistically proven. I'm sure there were surveys and polls done, right, to reinforce that. Mm-hmm. When you share that with a CEO or a leader of an organization or the leadership team, are they stunned?
I think they are stunned, and they certainly don't think that they're among those companies.
Sure, sure.
But then they start to examine their own, you know, we all have unconscious biases. We all have, again, our own perspectives. And they start to think about, well, how do I look at these other generations or these other populations in the workplace? Am I encouraging a respectful workplace? And it requires intent. It requires deliberation on their part to not only define what respect looks like within their organization, but to model it and to enforce it and to give people opportunities to communicate if they don't feel that they're being respected.
Yeah, in a safe environment. It's right. Funny, I have a niece. She graduated from Rutgers 2 years ago, so yeah. May would be 2 years. And I know, my alma mater. And she works for a company, and it's really funny. She is a really hardworking young lady, okay, very entrepreneurial, works hard. And in her workplace, there are people, I guess, my age. And they'll always say something like, oh, you know those millennials. So she shares with me, she goes, I get so mad, Ann Khan, because, you know, why do they say that? I'm not like, you know, do you know what a millennial is and how they think? So I shared with her and I said, you know, you are a millennial in so many ways, you don't realize it. So stop and take it from their perspective, because technology is intuitive for you. We have to think about it. You move fast with technology and you get annoyed when we can't keep up with you. So, you know, maybe you're rolling your eyes and they're picking up on that. So you have to be careful and understand their perspective as well as them understanding yours. But I know my colleagues say that a lot. Oh, those millennials. And it makes me crazy because I love surrounding myself with these millennials. It's like, teach me. What did you just say you do with that iPhone? Show me how to do that, you know?
You've got the right attitude. Exactly right. And I have to, you know, I've got a lot of millennials in my life. And I have to say, I kind of understand that they hear so much like millennials, this and that. And, you know, the fact of the matter is it's reciprocal across generations. The baby boomers like you and me have to be as respectful of the millennials as we expect for them to be of us and everyone else in between. So it's not a one way street. And, you know, the other good news, though, is that if we decide that we want to establish relationships and learn from the other generations, oh my goodness, there's a wealth of information. The older folks have so much institutional knowledge. They have so much experience. They've got so many relationships and advice that they can share. And of course, as you said, the younger folks are just technically expert and have their own relationship building ways, if you will. And so I think we have so much to learn from one another if we just get over the hump of saying, well, I don't understand them because I am not them.
Absolutely. And I might have shared this in the last show, but I just based on what you said, I have to share this very quick story. My dad, he's 87 now, I think, but he was maybe 70s, in his early 70s. And our local college has free classes for senior citizens. So I went over one day to drop something off. He lives locally and he had his coat on. And my dad doesn't usually go out at night. And it was in the winter. And I'm like, where are you going? He says, I'm taking a class at Brookdale. I'm like, you are? It's called AutoCAD. My dad was an engineer his whole life. And AutoCAD was just, he did blueprints, right? Hand-drawn blueprints. And this was just taking it and putting it on the computer. My dad is just a very forward-thinking man, brilliant. So he goes to takes this class. Well, I don't even think he had a computer at that time. And so he goes into the class and she's like, put the computer on, do this with the mouse. So my father was like, I don't know what she's talking about. The young man sitting next to him was an absolute love and said, do this and help my dad navigate. And, you know, a couple of weeks later, they're working on their project and inputting the data to create it on the computer. My dad looks over at the young man and he says, your building is inviolable. And the kid looks at him and goes, what are you talking about? And he says, you're 1/32nd off in this corner, you know, whatever it was. And he looks at my dad and he goes, how do you know that? And my father said, well, because I'm an engineer and I'm telling you, you're going to fail because that building would collapse if they ever took your plans to live. And so the kid looks, this is a smart kid, looks at my dad and he says, John, my dad's name is John. John, we have a study group. You want to join us? We'll help you with the technology. You help us with the engineering.
Absolutely wonderful.
Brilliant.
You know, we encourage this, this reverse mentoring.
Yes,
comes in all directions and everyone. Your father has so much to offer the younger folks, and they've got a lot to offer him as well.
Yeah.
And they know that, which is, you know, that's going to put you at a competitive advantage. The more information that you can glean from other people who don't have the experiences you have, the better, because you become more well-rounded, you become more knowledgeable, you become more valuable to
Absolutely.
Your company.
And I give credit to the young man. My dad didn't even know what a study group was, which was cute. But this young man, how brilliant was he to take advantage of my dad's knowledge and what they can learn real life. My dad could lift that information off the page for them and make it real. So just, again, I agree with you. We have to have this mutual respect for each other. And I think that's when magic happens.
Now, I do too. Excuse me.
That's okay. My next question was, in the book, you talk about sexism is in the workplace and it's alive and well. What are some business practices that are reinforcing that, or that can reinforce gender respect?
That can reinforce gender respect. Okay. Thank you for that question. You know, right now we still kind of are living on it's not quite the Mad Men approach, if you will, but there's a lot of etiquette on the job that is sort of based upon social rules as opposed to business rules. What we really want to challenge ourselves to do is not, you know, have preconceptions about women, for instance, that they're the ones who always arrange the parties or, you know, get the card to distribute or do whatever it happens to do that, you know, to kind of bring people together or, you know, go out to get their nails done. I know men who get their nails done, you know, and conversely, men, on the other hand, you know, we tend to think, well, they're they're the ones who are going to play cards or play golf or get drinks after work, and they may be, but why aren't we inviting persons of the opposite gender? So we are making distinctions maybe unknowingly. So that's something, because there's a lot of information that is shared over these social, in these social situations, and we don't want to discriminate. We want everyone to be privy to it. So basically, not treating others with our own unconscious biases about how genders should behave and what interests them.
And let me ask you a question. There's a many women's networking groups that they're just women, and which is funny because I feel like there's always men involved. I don't think we can help ourselves and not invite men. But typically, these women networking groups, do you find that dangerous, that we are forcing that segregation, so to speak?
I know what you're saying. And, we have a long way to go. I mean, women felt not empowered at all for so very long. And so they kind of banded together and they gained strength from one another. And so I think that's all well and good. But now we have to take it a big step further. And that is to realize that we are limiting ourselves if we leave it just women, I think.
Yeah, I sometimes feel that way. It's great. You know, we are women, hear us roar, all that stuff. But on the same token, it's still, there's still 50-50 in the, probably even more, in the workplace. There might even be more women at this point, but there's still men out there that we have to learn to navigate and work with. And if we're segregating ourselves, I feel like shame on us, right, to some extent.
Right. Well, you're right about the fact that it is about a 50-50 split, but women are not represented 50% in the boardroom among executives. I mean, so we've got to figure out what these men are doing.
We can learn from them, right?
Right. And a lot of good advice we can get from them, a lot of relationship building tips we can get from them. The men, I hope, are willing to share. Because that's important too. But yes, let's seek out the men.
I agree. Let's not segregate ourselves, certainly. Let's take a really quick break. Then when we come back, I want to talk about, because, we both live in the Northeast, which is a cultural melting pot, truly. How do we avoid offending someone, especially if you're not familiar with a particular culture? So I'd like to talk about that, because I think we sometimes do that by accident, and we certainly don't ever mean malice, but how can we prevent even that?
A speaker has little value to an audience unless you, the listener, is motivated and empowered to change. Connie Whitman of Whitman Associates is a renowned speaker and is an architect of change. Consultations, training, seminars, and speaking engagements are the venues where she affects change. Whether your responsibilities include customer service, sales, marketing, training, executive management, or ownership, and you are seeking change in your organization, then you need to hire Connie Whitman of Whitman Associates. Connie doesn't just fill your ears with rhetoric. She speaks to the heart and success of your business. So next time you need to hire a speaker, don't hire someone that just talks. Hire an architect of change, Connie Whitman. Just ask for Connie by calling 732-888-1420. That's 732-888-1420. Or email connie@whitmanassociates.com.
We are back. We are speaking with Roseanne Thomas. We're talking about etiquette in the workplace, but really it's all based on her new book, Excuse Me. The book is called Excuse Me, The Survival Guide to Modern Business. And the book is brilliant because it has just many tips, and you have a lot of stories in there to show the concepts and the perspective of, how we navigate in the workplace. So now, cultural differences. How do we not offend someone, especially if it's, innocent? How can we address that?
Okay, so it actually kind of goes back to the platinum rule. We've got to first and foremost realize that the way in which we see the world and the way in which they see the world can be far, far different. Everything could be different. They're obviously their history, their language, their religion, value systems, how they communicate, their attitudes toward women, toward minorities, age groups, everything could be different. So we've got to accept that, and then figure out what those differences are, and then make sure that we respect this culture. We're not going to ever change another person or their culture. That's not going to happen. What we can do is respect their culture, which leads again to the trust and the relationships. But, there's an old adage, cultures are neither good nor bad, right nor wrong. They're just different.
Yeah. And again, different is scary for people. So you know, we think you're different than me, you look different than me, you wear different clothes than me. And those prejudices, especially if it's something visual, right, the way someone dresses or just the way they look, we really have to watch those subconscious biases, because it's terrible. It's really not the right way to be. You know what's funny, Ro? I love when, you know, when I train my classes, and, you know, like I said, we're in the Northeast, so we have a tremendous melting pot of different cultures. And once, like at the holidays, they say, oh, I don't celebrate Christmas. And I say, oh, what do you celebrate? What do you do? What are your special foods that you guys eat? Because everybody has their specialties around the holidays. And the things you learn, and what this is kind of cool, too, people will bring me their homemade dishes.
Aww.
Yes. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so cool. I might not love it because it might be very strong flavors. And I'm not used to that. And they'll say that, but I think, wow, how generous that they thought to bring something they made, you know, homemade for me to taste because I showed an interest last time I saw them. Wow. Like that moves me. I have to be honest.
I don't blame you for thinking that. You're absolutely right. And you did that. Absolutely correctly. You know, just showing some interest and asking questions, it kind of puts us in a situation where we don't know. We're not the experts and we want to know. And it makes people feel valued, makes them feel respected. And the very good news is we don't have to know, and we can't know everything about another culture. We can't. We just can't. We barely know, you know, about the culture we're in.
It's true.
You know, and it's hard to even see that. But the fact of the matter is, just showing the respect and the interest and the appreciation goes so far, because you know what? People from other cultures, unfortunately, are not shown these things often enough.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. Again, it's just different than the way I was raised, but that doesn't mean it's bad or wrong or evil, or, you know what I'm saying? We have these preconceived ideas, which is just so, so darn dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have a question for you. We talked a little bit about the millennials before. So our kids, right? My kids, my nieces, nephews, they all grew up with online presence. It wasn't Facebook. It was called something else. And now Facebook and Snapchat and all these things that the kids are on. What if they do have a checkered online past? What advice do you give job seekers, you know, in how to kind of navigate that? Because it's out there.
It is out there, and it may go way, way back. So, you know, my recommendation is, regardless of what you think you've put out there, do a social media audit, which means going back as far to when you started first using social media. And what you want to do is look at it, take down any posts that could be potentially offensive or are of a political or religious nature. Mm. Of course, take down things that involve profanity or drug use or alcohol or questionable clothing. And people might think, well, why can't I show these authentic parts of myself? Well, you can, but it may not get you where you want to go in terms of engendering trust and respect from other people, because people are going to have their opinions, right or wrong, fairly or unfairly. They're going to make judgments about us based upon all of those things.
And Ro, let's face it, when we're young, we do some silly things.
Absolutely.
So, and you know, again, these millennials, the millennials grew up with technology. So it's like, you know, they're hip. So they're so used to it, and posting and boundaries, I think, are blurred for them because there was no privacy, because everything was on the social media platform. So they really need to do an audit. I love that recommendation, because when you look back now, because think about it, you know, if I'm 25 and I go back to when I was 18, I might look at it and go, I cannot believe I did that, just with that, you know, six or seven year different in perspective. So that's a great recommendation. So any newly and parents listening, if your kids are just graduating college, make sure they do that online audit before they start going out there and sending resumes and interviewing, et cetera. Now, the other big one, cell phone etiquette. Can we talk about that, please?
Oh, my goodness. Who here doesn't have? There are more cell phones in the world now than there are people, over 7 billion cell phones, and some people have more than one. You know, I understand it. It's obviously a time. It's fabulous. The convenience you cannot argue with. However, some people feel like they're being disrespected if we take calls, make calls, text, or respond to texts in their presence, and we can't really blame them, because all of a sudden they're a captive audience to us, and they don't know how much of their time is going to be invested in this call that you're on, and it kind of makes them feel second tier. And I do understand that. Now, having said that, if you're among a cohort that everyone is on their phone all the time, and that's just the culture of that particular group, fine. Everyone is fine with it. Everyone's fine with it. But if you're trying to communicate across cultures, across generations, I would be very careful not to let that phone get in the way of any relationship building. You know, studies tell us that just having a phone on a desk, it's not even on, but having it on a desk is enough to reduce empathy between people. And that's not what we're looking to do. We're looking to increase empathy.
Why does it decrease empathy? I'm not seeing that connection, Ro.
Well, I think just looking at the phone, people realize, any moment now, they don't know if it's on or off, I could be relegated to the backseat because of call or something like that. It kind of makes them feel like at any moment whatsoever, they will take a back seat. And that's possible. And so we don't even want that phone out there. We certainly don't want it on. Never during an interview do you want to even to glance at it. It's a nonverbal cue that for some reason, for that second, you thought maybe there was something more important coming in than what was going on between you and that interviewer.
You know what's funny? And I don't think I've ever had to say this, but, you know, when I teach, and I know you teach classes live as well, I have never had an issue with the cell phones. And it's funny because in the morning, sometimes people come in, they forget to turn it off and, you know, to put it on silent. And then all of a sudden I start and then it rings and they go, oh, I'm so sorry. And then they go in their purse or they, you know, the guy goes in their pocket and turns it off. I can say on a handful of times, now I don't know if that's just respect for me because I don't take my cell phone out. You know what I mean? It's not out. Why should it be? I'm teaching. You have my undivided attention.
Right.
I would say on a handful of times that I had to address a cell phone, verbally saying, look at that cell phone again, and we're going to have an issue. And I had to, one time I did, I had a young man, I had to take it away. I said, if you're not engaged, then you can leave. And, you know, you can tell your boss why you're leaving, but you can't be distracted on your phone as I'm teaching, because you see all the other people in the class looking over like, oh, my God, why is he doing that? And I actually took his phone away. He said, no, I'm going to stay. And I go, well, then you're giving me your phone, because clearly you can't control yourself. And I, yeah. And you know what? Don't disrespect me in a group like that. And I was very respectful in how I, you know, I joked around a little bit with him. And he's like, oh, okay, yeah. And, he gave me his phone. But I can say in the 17 years, I think that happened once. So I think you have to put out what you expect, right? Inspect what you expect, and then it will come back to you. So I cell phone etiquette for me, my kids, when we're eating dinner, they know not to pull out their cell phones, and they'll hear it ring, you know, especially if it's on the, you know, on the counters, we're eating at the kitchen table. They don't get up and look at it. Nothing is that important, you know, and I always tease, it's not like I'm a surgeon that I have to be on call because the liver transplant might be coming in. We're not that important, really.
No, I mean, messages, emergency messages always got through long before we ever had cell phones. So I agree with you. And, you know, that precious time over the dinner table with your family. Oh, my gosh. You know, that is it's truly precious. And you don't want that to be interrupted. Nothing is more important than that, I think.
Yeah, my kids are pretty good. And even if we go out to dinner, we just don't take our cell phones out. You know, you want to have a conversation. It's, you know, you don't get those times too often. So you try to capitalize on them, right?
I know there are some, you know, hosts at parties where they'll actually have you put your phone in a basket when you walk in.
I love it.
For a number of reasons. First of all, they don't want you on your phone the entire time. Secondly, there are privacy issues. If I'm a host, I'm not necessarily comfortable with people taking pictures of my home or anything. You know, I just, when you're there to socialize, you're there to be 100% present.
Isn't that the truth? Really? Well said. Last question. We have like 3 minutes left. How crucial do you think the business etiquette is in building our individual brands and helping us with our network?
Well, the fact of the matter is everyone has a brand, and our professional presence informs the brand. So we've got to think about that. You know, I did used to work for Tiffany & Company for a number of years, and they, lots of my friends and even clients would ask me, or just, I just want the blue box. Can you get me the blue box? And I knew what they were asking for. And I would always say, sure, I can get you a blue box as long as it contains paid for Tiffany merchandise.
Good for you.
That wasn't the answer they were looking for. It does go to packaging. And we've got to think about, you know, we're all precious gems. We've got so much to offer. We're you know, brilliant, you know, gems, if you will. But we've got to get someone to open the package and want to look inside because they can't see that from the outside. So we want to put together our packaging in such a way that it intrigues them to want to know what's inside that box. So, you know, and we have that power. We can do that.
And it's really easy with LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter and, you know, all of these things that we can, if you put valuable information out there, people will think, oh, she posts some really cool things. That's always informative, or I learned something, or it's inspiring, or whatever it is. That helps, I think, our branding as well, right? Our online presence.
Absolutely helps our branding. And that's the way in which we're going. Although I do tend to think, I see the pendulum swinging in both directions. A lot of people are doing what they call these digital detoxes now because they're missing the interaction of face-to-face, you know, conversations. But on the other hand, you know, the world and business is online. And so we've got to be concerned about our brands face-to-face and via social media. Sure.
Now that's, you know, I have to just share, that's quite interesting. I did a speaking event a few weeks ago, and my partner and I are launching this new digital communication product, right? Mm-hmm. So I went and I spoke and I shared content, you know, free content. And I offered for folks in the audience, there's a free online assessment we created, Ralph. So they take it, they came, they had their printouts or they had it on their phone. And I talked about the different styles of how we communicate. And I offered a 15-minute laser coaching call with them personally to kind of evaluate them as team leaders, what are their blind spots and that kind of thing. And I had a worksheet they had to fill out in advance because 15 minutes isn't really a lot of time. So I needed to do some prep work. And at the end of it, so many people were interested in what we're creating online. And I thought, wow, I thought we were going to do everything digitally. You know, we were going to send out emails and and content face to face. Live chat, you know, talking with people sparked more interest than anything we sent out online. So I, you know, yes, we're in a digital world and I'm not naive with that at all. And I am trying to learn all I can about it because shame on me, right? We talked about this before, not being relevant. Face-to-face communication, it's still important and it's still foundationally critical, I think, to our success.
Absolutely. No doubt about that. You know, when we're looking at the stark typewritten word, that doesn't convey the emotion the way in which we want it to. It certainly doesn't convey our nonverbal cues about how we're feeling about what we're saying. And so I think, you know, it's the face-to-face is ideal, but even if you can't manage that, the voice-to-voice
sure.
is better than the typewritten word to typewritten word, I think. Well, communicate the whole big picture.
And the kicker is you have Skype, you have Zoom, the Zoom meetings where it's you could see each other. And that's what I did. I scheduled Zoom meetings so I could record them as well. So they would have the advice I gave that they could go back and listen because it's quick, you know. Yeah. And the Zoom is brilliant because I could even share documents with them to say, here, this is what I'm talking about, or let's look at that website so I could give you an example. So you don't even have to be sitting next to me because we could do a Zoom or a Skype conversation. So the
Absolutely.
Technology supports that FaceTime as well as that verbal time. I agree with you 100%. It matters. It really does matter. Now, we're out of time, Ro. I know it always goes so fast. I want to share your book. So if you'd like more information, and I highly recommend Ro's book, go to protocoladvisors.com/excuse-me/. So protocoladvisors.com/excuse-me/. Your website is protocoladvisors.com, correct?
Yes, it is. But you know what, Con? They might, we'd actually just direct you to Amazon. So my thinking is go directly to Amazon.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Or they could go to your website, right?
Yeah, either one. Either one is fine.
But Amazon, again, the book is Excuse Me, And it's the, let me get say it right, the Survival Guide to Modern Business. So take it, check it out. If you're a leader and listening, you really need to buy this book. There's just so many useful tips and tools and ideas and how to execute. So yeah, please check it out. Also, if you need to reach me, you can reach me at Connie@WhitmanAssociates.com. And also my partner and I are offering a free communication style assessment. Just go to wisdomdecoded.com and right on that landing page is the free assessment. Check it out and report back. Tell me, I'd love feedback. So I'm here if you need me. Ro, thank you again just for taking the time and sharing just so much critical and important information that you've included in the book, but also just sharing your experiences and stories and stuff are helpful. And I appreciate that.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.
Always a delight talking to you, Ro. I hope you guys will join me weekly as we question, build, and discover together how to grow and just challenge ourselves so that we can embrace change and create change in our life just so much easier than we often think. Thanks again for joining us this week. You've been listening to Enlightenment of Change with me, your host, Connie Whitman, on webtalkradio.net. Thanks, everybody. Have a wonderful etiquette-filled week. Be well.
You've been listening to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. To learn more about Connie, visit her website, WhitmanASSOC.com. Thank you for tuning in. We're glad you were here.